Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
You know how fast you were going?
What?
How fast you were going?
65.
63.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
You gotta understand that I don't come up with this stuff. I just forward it along. You wouldn't arrest a guy who's just delivering drugs from one guy to another.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Oh yeah, you can milk anything with nipples. I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
The Fan.
First things first, rest in peace, sucker fair.
All right, welcome back in 103 here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. If you missed hour one, we broke down and talked about all things Oregon, Washington. You check that out in the Les Schwab Tires podcast section on demand, 1080thefan.com.
I really miss the sunshine. Not going to lie, being in a cave. I forgot how bad this is, man. I used to have a perfect view of the river.
Right.
It's a beautiful day outside.
Right. Yeah.
I don't even know what time. Is it nighttime yet? I'm confused.
It does kind of feel nighttime-ish with the lighting in here, so I'll give you that. By the way, for new listeners, we are currently changing some things up for the good in our studio. And so we're in this 1080 The Fan broom closet, and Dirt and I are just sitting chest to chest doing a radio show today. It's quite interesting.
It's like moving in with the in-laws while you're having some reconstruction work done in the place, isn't it?
Yes, I guess. Yeah,
a little bit.
That's fair.
I can't even see Swigart. He's behind me. I have to physically turn around just to see him.
He's super far away even with me, and I can see him.
And he keeps the lights down low, so you just kind of see like the shadow, the outline of his body. Mm-hmm. You can't really even tell that he's in there.
Yeah. Well, I like to operate in the shadows. So.
Yes, you do. You're a creepy, creepy man. All right, we got a lot to get to.
Somebody asked if we're going to repaint the walls to get the smell of Swigart out. Yep, Swag took a big dump, and now we got to refix the whole
building.
Yeah, I
was not allowed in your little phone booth of a studio.
No. All right, we have a lot we're going to get to here in the second hour, NFL stuff, but let's start with our NFL whip around.
Frozen Tundra.
How about them Cowboys? Dominant win. Did not see that coming. All right, let's start in London. I mentioned the Raiders. How about the team they played, the Seattle Seahawks? Boy, they put it on them yesterday.
There's a shotgun snap. Russell fumbles the snap, looks. Pump fake, steps up, throws to the end zone. Moore is there. He's in the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks, as Moore goes over the back railing behind the end zone. Nearest the stands, but he hangs on for a 19-yard touchdown reception, his third of this season.
An incredible play there by Russell Wilson. I believe that was that the dropped snap play where he dropped it, picked it up, and he burst through the line. Just a perfect throw to David Moore. That's Steve Rabel, Seahawks Radio Network, as heard here on The Fan. They not only beat Oakland, they destroyed Oakland. They won 27-3 and sacked Derek Carr six times.
It was a big statement win for them. I think I learned more about Oakland in that game, just how bad they actually are. It should have been a shutout. They got the garbage time field goal. And you look right now at the NFC standings, and really it's wide open for a wild card spot. I mean, you got the Redskins are in first place in the NFC East, are 3-2. The NFC North, everybody has a bad loss. We get to all those games, but the Bears, Vikings, and Packers have all lost games that they probably shouldn't have. The Falcons are below 500. I mean, you couldn't ask for a year where maybe an 8-8 team could make a wild card spot. Seattle could find their way there because Arizona they've already beaten, in San Francisco without Garoppolo is a bad football team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Second best game of the day, in my opinion, happened in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Roethlisberger lets it fly. Oh, Antonio Brown is gone. Touchdown. The Pittsburgh Steelers. Brilliant.
Iron Eagle Dan Fouts on the call there, CBS Sports, as Pittsburgh gets that game-winning touchdown pass to Antonio Brown. They beat the Bengals 28-21. As pointed out on the telecast, by the way, a pick play is basically what set Antonio Brown free there, gets the pass, goes right up the middle, and they score with about 10 seconds or so left. Cincinnati can't get the ball downfield, and Pittsburgh gets the sixth straight win over the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I picked Pittsburgh going into this one. And just Cincinnati, for whatever reason, has a Steeler problem. You mentioned it. They brought it up on the broadcast. That was an illegal pick play, but close enough to the line of scrimmage, they got away with it, and Antonio Brown ends up scoring the touchdown there. And another thing to keep an eye on, we're all awaiting a result to the Le'Veon Bell situation, but James Conner continues to play well, and even Le'Veon Bell tweeted him yesterday, but he had 111 yards on 19 carries, two touchdowns, so he had a dynamic game on the ground against a defense who had Vontaze Burfict back, who's been pretty strong against the run. That was a big win for the Steelers, a team that's got a lot of dysfunction now, seemingly right back on top of that AFC North.
Yeah, unfortunately, for the first time in a few weeks, I went sub-500 spraying the freaking line. Jason Swigard had to remind me of it down in Miami.
Here's first and 10. Osweiler throws complete. That's Albert Wilson.
Custer, Fox Sports, if you took Albert Wilson in fantasy, you got the biggest surprise of the day. That was his second touchdown, and that was about 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Chicago scored, and I'm like, oh yeah, Brock Osweiler's not going to tie this game up. He throws a five-yard slant to Albert Wilson. Wilson has one missed tackle, and boom, he's off to the races. They tie the game. They win in overtime and beat Chicago 31-28.
There are ugly losses in NFL games. You know, Minnesota falling at home to Buffalo is one that stands out in my mind. Then there's losing to Brock Osweiler.
Don't even. Do you know how cocky and confident I was when I found out he was the starter?
They didn't announce until 90 minutes before the game that Tannehill wasn't going to be able to go. And Osweiler threw a pick six in this game. He threw a pick
ridiculous.
Six. And then he ended up with 380 yards, and they found a way to win it. That is a terrible loss for Chicago. Yep. An inexcusable loss for them. When you look at the landscape of that division and the lead that they potentially could have had if they won, they were in control, and now they're right back into the middle of the pack with both Minnesota and Green Bay.
Yeah, real opportunity missed there by the old Chicago Bears, and they fall flat on their face. By the way, Brock Osweiler has beaten Chicago on three different teams now. Denver, Houston, and Miami.
You should lose a franchise for something like that.
Brock Osweiler owns the Chicago Bears.
Out of Chicago.
All right, let's go to an ugly but good football game, and that was in Houston, Texas.
Peterman picked off! Joseph! And he will go! Touchdown!
Okay, so I need somebody to explain something to me. That's Andrew Catalone, by the way, CBS Sports, as Houston gets a pick six. Did Josh Allen get injured?
Yes, he got injured.
Because I saw him, and then they went back on the red zone, and I saw Peterman, and I missed what happened.
Yeah, he threw the ball, and he grabbed his elbow immediately after he did it.
First freaking play, he threw a pick six, and Houston gets the win.
No, it wasn't his first play, because he actually had a touchdown on that drive.
The previous drive?
Yeah. When Peterman came in, he threw a touchdown pass, and everybody thought, oh, look at this, here comes Peterman.
I missed that then.
Yeah, no, this was the icer. This was the game was 13-13, and people were wondering, is Houston really going to find a way to win this game? Or lose this game, I should say. And then Peterman said, here you go, take a W.
So Houston gets the win over the Buffalo Bills. How about we go to Denver, where you thought you were going to get a snow game, and it sure looked that way. But they cleared the field. It was cold, but they cleared the field, and the LA Rams get the win.
He's an extremely important part of what we want to do and really for this team, and I thought he was outstanding really throughout the whole day. Made an impact in a variety of ways, ran hard. I thought the guys did an excellent job handling a really good front in the run game, and we were able to stay ahead of the chains and really, you know, with the exception of some things where it was more of a result of me putting us in bad spots than anything else. We ran the football extremely efficiently, and you can't say enough about Todd and really, you know, the other 10 that were instrumental in being able to do that.
28 carries, 208 yards for Todd Gurley and two touchdowns. The Rams beat the Broncos 23-20. Their defense was dominating a large stretch of this game against that Denver offense. The Broncos battle back and make it a ball game. But the Rams, the last undefeated team in the NFL.
Yeah, and it could go on for a while when you look at their upcoming schedule. I think this was a big one for them. It's almost like when a starting pitcher doesn't have his best stuff and he's still able to find a way to win. That, to me, was the case with the Rams yesterday. The passing game wasn't as dynamic. They have some injury concerns. Cooper Kupp going down. And they still found a way with Todd Gurley running the football to win that game. And I think that's one that you're really confident in. And on Denver's side of things, that's a pretty tough 2-4. I think they're a little bit better than their record indicates. They lost a game to Kansas City on Monday night that they almost won. You could argue should have won. They had to play the Rams this weekend, a game that they were in. They scored 10 fourth quarter points to get right back into it. Had a chance on an onside kick to recover it and then kick a tying field goal. So Denver, they've had to play the Chiefs and the Rams, which is brutal. And John Elway was in Eugene this weekend. He was there scouting Justin Herbert. So clearly not happy with what Case Keenum's done so far in his Broncos career.
Did you go have a Chris Farley moment with him?
I did not. I stayed on the field the whole game.
You didn't see him on the field pregame?
I did not, no.
He probably kept a really low profile.
He was wearing a hat, so he might have been walking around, and I just didn't recognize him.
Yeah.
All right, last one. How about Sunday Night Football? The New England Patriots get a field goal with about 3 seconds to go. They beat the Chiefs and stop their undefeated streak, 43-40. Here's Bill Belichick in the postgame.
Well, we talk about it every week. And each situation is a little bit different based on time, timeouts, and score, and so forth. This one ended up playing out good for us. We had the final possession. We had the final opportunity, and we made it. So it's great. You know, Josh called a great game. We had great execution in that drive by a lot of different people. But we work on that stuff every week, both ways. If they had had it, if we had it, need a touchdown, need a field goal, so forth. So try to be prepared for that.
Hey, somewhat good answer there by Bill Belichick. He does like to play with the media sometimes. And that's where we're going to go, New England and Kansas City. Was that an AFC title game preview, or are you not buying the Chiefs? We'll talk about that game next on 1080 The Fan. We got a great game in the NFL last night, Sunday Night Football. Kansas City going to New England. They were 5-0 heading into that matchup. Only one quarterback 25 years or younger had beaten New England. It was Colin Kaepernick. And Patrick Mahomes did not disappoint. He had some early picks, I get that, but boy, he was fun to watch in the second half. 3 touchdown passes.
Well, it's a reminder that young quarterbacks make mistakes. He's not perfect. He's not going to throw 5 touchdowns and no picks in every game.
Right.
The guy's going to have a couple of boneheaded throws every now and then.
And it was a hell of a game. I mean, especially on offense, you had almost no defense played in the second half. Both teams going back and forth with touchdowns. But New England gets the last possession. They throw basically a streak to Rob Gronkowski, who for some reason was single covered by somebody 5 inches shorter than him. And it's an easy pitch and catch, and New England just kills the clock, and they kick the field goal. They get to win 43-40. Is this our AFC title game preview?
I don't know at this point how you pick anybody else. You know, I tweeted that last night after the game. Can we get a replay of that in January, please? And somebody responded, you know, no thanks, Kansas City was 5-0 last year. This is a different football team with Patrick Mahomes than it was with Alex Smith. You know how much I love my boy Alex Smith, but Mahomes just brings such a different dynamic to this offense and his ability to push the ball down the field, the way he throws the ball on the run. The couple of mistakes or things that he's going to learn from. This is his first year as a starter. He's only started in, 7 games in his career, and last year's game against Denver didn't mean anything. So really only 6 meaningful games in his career. So he's going to make mistakes. But with the way he runs that offense, Kareem Hunt had a big day. I thought they should have gone with the run a little bit more because he averaged 8 yards a carry, and they only gave him 10 of those on the day. It really was a fun matchup, and it's hard for me to see anybody else. Maybe Pittsburgh with Le'Veon Bell back. I don't trust Cincinnati come playoff time. I'm throwing out the whole AFC East outside of New England.
What about the Chargers? Made quite a statement yesterday.
Yeah, they did. They beat the Browns.
First of all, I would say about Patrick Mahomes, because I know some people poo-poo what he has meant early on, because Alex Smith and the Chiefs, I think, had a very similar start last year. Sometimes numbers don't tell the whole story, right? Like, the numbers can be somewhat similar, but we're 6 weeks in now. It's pretty clear what's different between Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes.
I would say so.
Right? Like, he may not be a Hall of Fame quarterback, but I think right now in the moment, you completely understand what Andy Reid and that coaching staff see and the reason why they wanted to give Alex Smith a new destination and put Patrick Mahomes in. But here's where I would open the door here. I'd leave the door open. I hope that's the AFC title game matchup, by the way, because I love watching the Chiefs play. An argument could be made they're the most entertaining team in sports right now of anybody in any sport. But the reason I leave the door open is, one, you are dealing with a first-year starter, So at some point, he may just have a three-pick game, no touchdowns. And two, that defense is so god-awful.
Yeah, they're bad.
That I won't eliminate Cincinnati. I won't eliminate Pittsburgh. I won't eliminate the Chargers. I will not eliminate legit AFC playoff contending teams, because at the end of the day, if you don't have a defense to make a stop, man, you just get screwed like they did last night where New England gets the ball last and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, it's just a matter of having it at the end of the game. And New England, that was such a perfectly orchestrated two-minute drill of using up all the time, not allowing Kansas City another opportunity to have the ball. That was, if you look up in a dictionary how you want to run a two-minute drill, that was it. I see your point about the defense, and that is a concern. Although, I think a lot of that, too, last night had to do with Tom Brady being on the other side, had to do with Rob Gronkowski, had to do with Sonny Michel, had a big game for them, 106 yards. Josh Gordon starting to fit into that New England offense. Edelman's back and finding his groove. I mean, you're talking about the front runner in the AFC. And again, this is another year that we've done it with New England of, you know, they get off to a slow start two, three games into the season and everybody says, what's wrong? Are they too old? Is this all over? Here they are 4-2, and in my opinion, the clear-cut front-runner again in the AFC because Tom Brady continues to be undefeated against Father Time. So you're right. Kansas City's defense sucks, and they're giving up points left and right, but I think a part of that equation last night was having the goat on the other side.
I mean, not that it really matters to this conversation per se, but also Baltimore. They won 21-0. I know they had that loss against the Cleveland Browns, but Baltimore and that defense, man, we saw it against Mariota and company. They can really slow you down. I know the Chiefs' offense is substantially better than what the Titans have right now.
Mariota had more sacks than completions.
No, he didn't.
Yeah. He was sacked. Somebody can help me with that. I saw this.
That's got to be the first ever, right?
He's the fourth in the history of the NFL, and I believe the first one since like the mid-1980s. He had 11 sacks.
He was sacked 11 times?
He was sacked 11 times. Wow. Oh, let me pull up. I know. I saw this stat that he had fewer completions than that.
That game looked so boring. I had no interest in following anything that was going on.
They didn't score. And the only time I remember flipping to it, there was like a guy for the like a serious injury, and I was like, what a buzzkill.
Right.
He had 10 completions. Wow. He was 10 of 15, and then he was sacked 11 times. So he was sacked more times than he completed a pass.
Are we eliminating Tennessee?
They're in first place in the AFC South. Thank you very much. Thank you. See, no, here's the funny part. No,
I think that speaks more to the AFC South.
Look, Tennessee's, yeah, I got over my skis.
I think we know the Super Bowl winner's not coming from that division, right?
Yes, but when you look at that's the crazy part is that went from being a year ago one of the better divisions to preseason, yeah. Ooh, great division.
I was in on it, man.
Jacksonville got housed by Dallas.
Boy.
Dallas.
How does that happen?
And Houston should be, you can make an argument, 0-6.
Yeah, there's a really good case to be made for that.
Almost lost to the Bills and Peterman. Dallas punted it to him, and then the Colts in the overtime decided to go for it and handed him a short field. They've won three games in a row against the Colts, the Cowboys, and the Buffalo Bills.
You know, at one point last night during that Sunday night game, because it was fun to watch Brady sling it, it's fun to watch Patrick Mahomes play, was there any part of you thinking, man, this is too much offense? Is there any party it's like, nobody can get a stop?
Watching the Chiefs just get mauled, like they were giving up 7, 8, 10 yards a clip in the opening of the half, I'm like,
yeah,
you got to have some resistance.
But New England at some point turned into them too.
New England held them to 9 in the first half.
They made them kick 30 goals early.
Right, but Kansas City got touchdowns in that second half, and they started doing the same thing to that defense.
Now, can I ask this? This might be
ask anything you want.
This might be reactionary. I don't know if there's a receiver in the NFL at this point that I would take ahead of Tyreek Hill.
Not Antonio Brown?
I don't know, man.
What about Odell?
No, well, you know my answer.
Yeah,
on
I guess
that one.
We both feel the same way about Odell.
That guy.
What about AJ Green?
Collinsworth last night pointed it out on that 75 yard touchdown to tie the game.
Stupid how fast he is compared
to
everybody
else.
They were
in position.
Both guys.
Where they were supposed to be.
Yeah.
And he caught it and he made those guys look like JV high school football players.
I thought McCourty could have dove at him, but I'm still like, you know what? Maybe he couldn't have.
He's just holding the piece up. See you later. Yeah, nobody's catching him.
Plus, Hill returns kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the only player outside of Gale Sayers to have 4 return touchdowns and 20-plus touchdowns from scrimmage. Him and Gale Sayers, only players to do that.
Look, Antonio Brown's a better quote-unquote wide receiver. AJ Green, Julio Jones, like they're better wide receivers.
That's an interesting, what player would you rather have? Antonio, well, because Antonio has returned punts too.
He does. But the dynamic nature of Tyreek Hill, he's just like, he's lightning in a bottle. Remember him in that Chargers game in week two?
I do.
Like, every time he touched it, he was going for a touchdown.
He feels like a cheat code.
He does.
He's one of those where Mahomes at some point, a lot has been made about that arm. He, in one of these games this year, is legitimately going to throw like an 80-yard touchdown where the ball travels 70, and Tyreek Hill just flat-out outruns the DB.
Yeah, that I was just thinking about that last night because they get the ball. I mean, we were all pumped for that drive to see what Mahomes could do, right? About 3 minutes left or 2.5 minutes left. Chiefs get the ball, own 25-yard line. Let's see what the rookie can do on the road. And it was the first play. He went for 75 and tied the thing up. And it was a great throw, a little bit behind him, but I can't blame him for throwing it behind a guy like Tyreek Hill. I thought the other thing out of last night's game too was the hold up. I can't remember the guy's name, but the hold up on Tom Brady, the non-sack,
the linebacker, right?
Because he was concerned about getting a roughing the passer call. And I think that's one that you highlight if you're concerned about the direction of the league. He should have been down. Not to say no, I can't remember the down and distance situations, so I don't know if New England ends up going on scoring either way, but he had him sacked.
Well, they would have scored for sure because they're in field goal range.
So they would have got at least. I couldn't remember if it was third down or not. But he had him. He had him wrapped up. He had the sack. He was going down, and then he saw Brady's arm move on a pump fake. Thought he threw it. He held up. Brady escapes and runs for a touchdown.
I mean, that's just another example of what that penalty has really kind of meant to defensive players. And you're kind of like, why don't you sack him? But you're also understanding it's not easy. It is not easy in the NFL. I don't know if they'll get to the AFC title game. I don't know if they get to the Super Bowl. No fandom or bias involved here. I totally want to see them in the Super Bowl, though. They are the team that I would want to watch the most in the AFC.
I think everybody's kind of circling the dream matchup being the Rams
and
the Chiefs.
I mean, there's no defense. I don't even care if Talib's back. Just give me all offense. Give me that game.
You know, for the non-defense stuff, though, do you remember the Super Bowl last year was 41-33?
Right.
That was a great game.
Brady threw for 500 yards.
500 yards. That was a great game. Back and forth. Big plays. Trick plays. Explosive plays. Like that. Eventually, yes, you would like to see a stop. You saw it early from New England, at least before their defense became a sieve in the second half.
But yeah.
when it's that dynamic offense, man, it's hard to look away.
All right, we'll stick in the NFL because I have to ask this question, Dirt. What's up with your boy Chucky? Because John Gruden looks like maybe bottom three head coaches in the NFL right now. The Raiders get obliterated by the Seahawks in London. What is going on in Oakland? We'll talk about that next.
Oh, and just like the river I've been running.
Welcome back in, 1:34. Hope your Mondays are going well. Get into some Pac-12 football coming up in 10 minutes. Some national college football to start the final hour of the show. Oregon and Washington conversation to revisit as well. So we got a lot to get to over the next hour and a half. There is one team that has really stood out based on the conversation that existed around them in the preseason to where they are now, almost at the halfway point of the NFL season. And that team is the Oakland Raiders.
Hey. Putting the ball right there in the turkey hole.
What's up, John?
Johnny boy. They, if you didn't watch this weekend, were killed by the Seattle Seahawks at a late second or end of the game field goal to avoid getting shut out. They now sit at 1-5. That only win came against the Cleveland Browns, a game that the NFL handed to them. So they should be 0-6 when you think back to the way that game was finished and wrapped up. And this has got a lot of people kind of questioning what's going on here, especially with John Gruden. And there is one story that came out in the aftermath of their loss to the Seahawks that had a lot of people chuckling, and that is they played that game in London. Now, we know there's an 8-hour time difference there, so it's a big gap. You got to get your guys ready to go. John Gruden, for some reason, decided to fly his team to London on Friday, 48 hours before the game started. He said last week, he said, I did a lot of research on it, obviously. People that have done it, people that have made that cross-country trip, I don't know much about it. We're just going to do the best thing for our players, get the proper preparation here, then go to London, get them the proper rest time, then get ready to play. That did not happen. And people were wondering, was that a bearing on it? Does this team just suck? Is John Gruden a bad football coach? What the hell is going on in Oakland?
I do think the team is not that talented. Also, by the way, doesn't help when you trade your best defensive player because you don't want to pay him, and then you start bitching and complaining about not having a pass rush. I think that hurt the locker room a lot more than he imagined it would. And then the Derek Carr situation. I mean, that's a weird relationship right now. And I think if you think otherwise, you're just not paying attention. He had another comment about how he's trying to slowly build this team back. He's only been there 6-7 months. Derek Carr was asked about rebuilding on the fly, and he basically said, I hope we're not rebuilding. I'm in year five. I don't want to be doing this. I just think that relationship's weird. I'm not sure what he's doing right now, his approach to the team, is the right way to go about doing it in the NFL. And he's catching up and realizing a lot of things that maybe he didn't realize coming in to the NFL after being out for 10 plus years. So I think it's just a mixed bag of things that are killing him. And this is why I didn't like him this year. I think they're going to win five games or less. And at this point, if they don't win two of their next three, I think they have Arizona, Indianapolis, and San Francisco, or at least be close to three of their next four, excuse me. They might go winless the rest of the way. Because look at the schedule. After they play, so this weekend they get the Colts. The Colts, you can beat the Colts, but maybe they don't. Then you're at San Francisco. That's going to be a real rival game because of the Bay Area situation. Then the Chargers, I don't expect you to beat them. Then you're at the Cardinals. It's a winnable game. And then you play the schedule game after that. Where's their next win? Denver, maybe at home. Outside of that,
yeah,
it's going to be tough sledding. So I just think a lot of things are killing Oakland right now. And the main one is John Gruden is... he's really stubborn and not changing a damn thing.
Yeah, and I think a big thing that's gone against him this year is not having a pass rush, which is what everybody just laughs about, because you had the best pass rusher in the NFL and you decided to trade him for draft picks. Now, look, maybe they hit on those draft picks and in the long run it ends up being an okay deal, but for now it looks like a terrible trade for them. And I'm also wondering, too, just... Derek Carr to me is an interesting storyline, because John Gruden is getting a lot of flack and a lot of attention for being over his head and not getting the team ready to play the way that he's supposed to. And he deserves all the criticism that he's getting. Derek Carr is another guy, though, that now in his fifth year in the NFL, six games into the season, he has seven touchdown passes. Six games into the season.
Yeah.
And that's when the coach and the quarterback often go hand in hand, especially when you're an offensive coach like John Gruden and he's running the offense down there. But this is an organization that if the season continues to go the way that it goes, you're going to have to look yourself in the mirror and answer some tough questions. And maybe first and foremost, Derek Carr doesn't want to rebuild. That's fine. You're not playing good. You threw three picks, lost in the opening game against the Rams on Monday night. Some of the worst picks that I've seen. And their only win of the year, he threw two picks against the Browns. They lost to Miami despite having the lead. He threw two picks in that game. He threw a pick this 2 weeks ago against the Chargers, and he only had 142 yards against the Seahawks on Sunday. Yeah. He has not played up to the level that I think some people thought 2 years ago when they started, finished 13-3 or 12-4, whatever it was.
12-4 that year.
They gave him the big contract extension. People thought it was injuries last year. They finished 6-10. Now they're off to a 1-5 start. I think the disappointment for me, for them, goes hand in hand. Gruden has been terrible, and Derek Carr hasn't helped him out.
Yeah, I think this is a fair point, too, at the Better You Today text line. He hasn't been the same since he broke his leg. They were terrible last year, and they're off to another terrible start this year. And we watched the Ram game, I think, sticks in your mind. And I've seen I watched a lot of their Cleveland game. I saw bits and pieces of this one, but you could tell this one was over from the get-go. The one that sticks in my mind is that Ram game. I mean, some of those throws, what are you seeing? He tried to throw one out of bounds, and it wasn't close. It was picked off. The only thing I would say in response to that, though, is we are seeing, right now, we're seeing what in the NFL? Good offensive minds are able to do a lot with whoever their quarterback is. This is where the John Gruden factor plays in for me. I think Derek Carr is struggling mightily. This is a $10 million a year coach.
$10 million a year.
I can almost think of 10 other coaches I'd rather pay $10 million a year than John Gruden. And I think that's killing him. Yeah. When you have $10 million a year as a head coach, the expectation is not 1-5. I don't care what you're lacking in. You shouldn't be this inept and this bad. And even with Derek Carr, again, I think we just point to the coaches around the National Football League right now. You're seeing that when with the right offensive-minded coach, no matter who the quarterback is, they play substantially better. And right now, it doesn't seem any different than what you have with Jack Del Rio versus what you have with John Gruden.
Yeah, that's a valid point. You mentioned the quote from Gruden. Somebody asked him about kind of rebuilding, and he said after the game, "We're going to continue to build a team. I've only been here 6 or 7 months. We've got some guys hurt," and then Carr's response. But yeah, this is my fifth year. I don't like to talk about a rebuild.
Right.
So there's a weird disconnect there. And I think a lot of this, too, goes back to both on the field and off the field. The decision to trade Khalil Mack. Defensively, you took a huge step backwards by losing him and not getting anything of substance in return, at least in the short term. But also just the message that sends to a team of, We know a guy is as dominant as he is. We realize he's the best pass rusher in the league. He wants to get paid. There's other teams that are willing to pay him. We're not willing to pay him, though. He was beloved in that locker room. Remember all the teammates that were tweeting after that trade happened? You know, Bruce Irvin.
Including Derek Carr.
Including Derek Carr. Everybody just kind of with these, like, shocked reactions to, wait a minute, what? We're getting just draft picks in return? And that sends an interesting message to your team of you can perform here. You can be a great player here. You could be a dynamic pass rusher. When it comes time to pay you, we might think about trading you out. And I think it's just you look at the impact on the field, which is undoubtable, and he brings it up after every game. We need a better pass rush. But then just what that goes into the psyche inside that locker room of you're willing to trade a guy like that, none of us are safe.
Do they respond this weekend, or do you think he lost a team?
No, I think I'm not picking him again. I don't know how you do.
Yeah, even against the Niners and Cardinals, like I look at those games and go, I could see them losing it.
It's maybe Seattle's better than we thought. Seattle's not a dominant football team, and they just kicked their ass up and down the field.
You got to show up. I know we have a lot of weird London games, but you got to at least show up. They didn't show up at all for that game. And this is a valid point, kind of tying it back locally. A lot of people calling in and asking for John Gruden versus what they had Mario Cristobal, huh?
Yeah.
Imagine that.
That's very true.
He's never even been in college. We're going to take the guy who's been 10 years out of the NFL, and then you wanted him to coach a college team.
Hey, it's working for Lovie Smith. Oh, wait, what?
Oh. Boy, that's a disaster.
So there you go. Raiders, man. It's not looking good right now down in Oakland, but at least they got that new shiny stadium waiting for them in Vegas in a couple of years.
Well, a lot of people are wondering now where they're going to play potentially next year. There's like a lawsuit pending with Oakland.
They're suing the city's suing them right now. So there you go. Buckle up, Oakland. Things should be fun over the next couple of months. We'll see if they can get off the schneid. Hey, we'll get into the national landscape of college football. Some upsets and some big wins coming up here at 2 o'clock. But let's dive into the Pac-12 slate. How about Chip Kelly, huh? Everybody doubting him, getting a big win on the road. And then what the hell, Colorado? Right when we all believe.
Damn it.
You throw that stinker out there. We'll talk some Pac-12 football. We'll do it next. Crunch time on the Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. I was out at the Glorious House of Gains today.
Let's go!
Thanks, Tommy. Little Monday workout. Hey, National College Football Landscape coming up top of the hour. Get back into Oregon and Washington at 2:15. We're going to talk some Pac-12 here. I did see this on Twitter, and I wanted to bring it up. Nick Daschle, he's the beat writer, I believe, for the Oregonian, covering the Beavs.
Is that the guy they chose to beat?
He's the Beav guy.
I don't even know who the Ducks guy is. Do you know his name?
Don't either, no.
I didn't even see an announcement.
They just read articles about how bad the fans were. By the way, everybody I've talked to said it was actually a pretty cordial atmosphere. There weren't any fistfights, no beers being thrown.
Well, no fans left
after shout. How about that?
Yeah. Wow. It was super loud, I heard.
It was very loud.
Yeah.
Real douches, though. Huh?
I thought you guys were just god-awful. I was embarrassed by the performance of your fans on Saturday. Quite frankly, winning a game on an overtime touchdown, I thought you'd be a little louder and more energetic than what you did. I was quite disappointed.
Figured I'd be punching people in the face.
Click to read more here.
Whole thing, man. No, the Pac-12 has apparently scolded Oregon State. So remember the kickoff play against Washington State where the guy laid in the end zone? Little gadget play that they had?
The best part about that play was that he was camouflaged into the end zone.
The Pac-12 has reportedly called Oregon State and informed them this is a no-no. Because you've indicated an injury.
What?
I'm not making that up.
Is that a real rule?
That's the Pac-12 is saying you can't do that, Beavers. You faked an injury.
Okay. Before I'm going to lose my mind over them caring about something that happened 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, they just released that statement.
I'm glad they've thought about it for 2 weeks and decided to tell us today. One, incredibly creative by Oregon State special teams and their coaching staff to do that play. I quite enjoyed watching him lay there and then randomly pop up and get the ball.
It's a brilliant play. It's like when you send the guy over to the sideline and he stands right on the edge
of the field.
And you think he's off, but he's actually still on. It's a brilliant play.
I loved that play, so the Pac-12 can just F off for all I care. And two, why not? Why are we commenting on this and not commenting on how god awful your national ABC crew was?
It was an embarrassment. It was an embarrassment.
They didn't know what offsides was. They didn't know that there was a fumble going on. They left their mics on in their huddle and then turned it off when he needed to make an announcement. After coming off a week in which your conference was embarrassing to the rest of the college football crowd for how you didn't handle targeting, you had that performance.
Hey, they didn't overturn those targeting calls, though, so they got there was no third party at least calling in and overturning calls. Actually, the first one against Oregon was not called on the field, so maybe he did call in and overturn it. I don't know.
Get out of here with commenting on something like that from 2 weeks ago. How about you comment on what we saw at 12:30 on ABC, and that was an embarrassment.
That was such a bad look. By the way, side note, can somebody inform me what offsides on the return team is?
I never heard of
that. I don't
know
the rule book inside and out, so I'm sure there's little nuances that I don't understand.
I know what it is. I don't know if they call it offsides, but I know what it would be for the kick team.
Yeah, they cross the line before you kick the ball. Yeah. That's offsides on the kicking team. So if you don't know what we're talking about, on the Tony Brooks James fumble on the kickoff return, they first left their mics on when discussing the play, so everybody at home watching and everybody in the stadium could hear what they were talking about.
It was just like the commercial.
It was just like the commercial.
I didn't see the play. What do you think?
I didn't either.
I don't know. Call it a fumble.
So what am I doing here? What am I saying? Like they were legit saying that to each other. And then they come out and they say offsides on the return team, Washington re-kicks. To which Oregon fan responded by saying, wait, okay, we didn't fumble. This is a re-kick.
They never mentioned the fumble in the initial call.
They never mentioned it. And then Peterson's reaction was hilarious because he's just standing on the side. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I was standing next to a random media member that I've never talked to. I don't know who he is. He was a photographer. And I looked over at him and he looked at me and we just both at the same time said, what's offsides on the return team? Everybody was confused. And then like 2 minutes later, they came back and said, well, we're reviewing the fumble. Never mind. And then they gave it back.
Okay. I don't know if this is legit. I'm not calling this person wrong, but I also haven't looked this up. So this is lazy me, but I'm going to read a thought here from one listener at the Better Today text line. Lined up on the wrong side of the 45.
Okay, that's what is off, because I don't know. I've never heard that called before.
It says, you're 10 yards back from the ball at the kick. They were inside of that. So okay.
That would make sense. I just have never heard that. I've never heard that in a football game in my life before.
It's obviously a real rule, but what's funny about it in this conversation is the fact that I'm not even sure they knew if it was a real rule because they didn't quite follow up with that. Nor did they even acknowledge that there was a fumble.
At first, you would think you would walk over to the Washington sideline and say, hey, Oregon was lined up offsides. Would you like to decline the penalty? Should we review the turnover first? It seems like a pretty easy protocol here.
Have you ever seen that called?
I've never seen it called.
The offsides on the receiving team?
Offsides on the receiver. I thought he misspoke.
I did too.
I thought it was, maybe they were offsides on the kicking team and then they would re-kick.
The only time I've seen it is on an onside kick where they're creeping up and they get over
too close
before
but not
the
on
balls
like a regular
kicks.
Kickoff
but on a regular kickoff no
what it's like offsides on the receiving team.
Be honest with you, a regular kick as an official, and this is why I'll never be a ref, I wouldn't even be looking for that.
Yeah, how do you have one guy had his toe over the line? Who was it? Yeah.
Okay,
what
here we
the
go.
What's going on here? Not to distract an entire segment, we're going to have to carry this over in the final hour.
I'm really frustrated with that, man. This was a whole week going into that game, Dirt, that we talked about how bad the officiating is and how terrible a look that is for Larry Scott in that conference, which, by the way, they did nothing of anybody losing a job. Nobody really got in trouble.
No, they're sweeping it under the rug.
Just business as usual. No big deal. They're getting destroyed nationally from that standpoint. You've got coaches and scouts, coaches and other university members telling national media types, yeah, that's very Pac-12. You had that the whole week, and that was what happened with that crew on Saturday. You were just... It's a palm to the forehead of what are we doing here?
Those guys were so bad. They missed a ton of calls throughout the course of the game, just when you're watching in the flow of things that you could easily see both on TV and on the field. And just to have I know it's such a little thing, but keeping the microphone on and the message that sends.
I have seen that before.
I know, but just after this, and that's a national TV game. That was the first quarter. So I think the Nebraska-Northwestern game went a little long, and then they flipped over to it, and then that was like when the first things that people across the country see when there's already this negative stereotype about your officials, and then they do that. It just was such a bad look this weekend. So, yeah, we got distracted there, but, yeah, they called Oregon State and said, you can't do that anymore, all right? So quit cheating, Jonathan Smith. Not only is he tampering.
Well, is it cheating?
He's faking injuries on the field, too, man. No, they just said it's a no-no. You can't make the other team think a player is injured.
Why didn't they call it then in the game? Why didn't they call it during the game?
Ah, dear Lord. Okay, we didn't get to the Pac-12 there. Let's do that to start the final hour of the show. As Colorado, what happened to them? How about Utah and Arizona on Friday night? What a snoozer that game was. UCLA got their first win. And then we'll also take a look at the national landscape as we got some upsets. Michigan with the big win over the weekend. How about LSU and that bounce back performance from them? And then we got to get back into the Oregon and Washington games. Still a lot to get to in the final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.